Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Today is the Tirobhav Mahotsav, or the disappearance day of two very exalted personalities. One is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakurji and then Gadadhar Pandit. So, today we will be speaking on these two personalities who are so very important to our Sampradaya. So, who are so very integral to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. One, an exalted saint, a pure devotee of the Lord, and the other, an incarnation itself. So, for our own beautification, let's have this talk. Today, so therefore, we will not be doing the sequence of verse. But speaking on these personalities itself is Srimad Bhagavatam, because there are two types of Bhagavatam, the book Bhagavatam and the person Bhagavatam. So we speak on person Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Who is the personified transcendental energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the strict follower of the six Goswamis headed by Srila Rupa Goswami.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So as I mentioned before, today we will be speaking on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gadadhar Pandit, given that it is their anniversary today, Tirobhava Mahotsav. So, why can go on speaking? Speaking on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It is, there is a whole book called as the Seventh Goswami. So, but we have limited time. So, we will restrict to a few aspects of this pastime and then we will let everyone read it during the day based on their own bandwidth available to study more on this exalted personality. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is one of the most prominent acharyas in our disciplic succession. Gaudiya Vaishnava Parampara. And very, very instrumental in the formation of ISKCON in an indirect way. Of course, Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON, but the blessings and the inspiration of, without the blessing and inspiration of Srila Prabhupada, this would not have been possible. In fact, you know, we have so many budgets that we sing on a daily basis, which Srila Prabhupada has written, we just sang one. So his contribution permeates our daily lives, if you like. And especially for the Rinsa community, the household community. If one wants to look up to someone who was an ideal Rinsa, or Rinsa Brahmachari, if you like, then the Jeevan or the lifetime of Srila Thakur offers valuable lessons to even someone in a householder life. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's contribution can be called, described as nothing short of stellar contribution. Stellar contribution in re-establishing the pristine form of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the pure form of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, re-establishing it. Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also says, Evam parampara praptam imam rāgadishyogya sakāryanya mantra yoga harsha parantapala. So what happens is many times the original teachings which are given by the Lord of Sanatana Dharma, they are, over a period of time, they are colored by different personalities who come, some may give their own interpretation, and many times they are lost, simply lost. Today even the Vedas are lost, So therefore, Lord Krishna came and then re-established that. So similarly, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur advented, you know, he appeared in this world in 1838, at that time, there was, you know, Gaudiya Vaishnavism was, the pure form of Gaudiya Vaishnavism was lost. So he took the onus on himself to bring it back. And there were, in the entire ecosystem, at that point in time, there was quite a bit of trouble, if you see. It was not easy. When Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur took birth, there were a lot of challenges from different sections of society. Two major challenges here came from the British government and the Britishers who were ruling at that point in time, and obviously the Indian community itself, especially the so-called intellectual and not so-called, not really intellectual, but so-called intellectual Indians of the time. So historically, we have studied some of the people who qualified them in our textbooks. In retrospect, I would do that. So the first one was the British rule. So all of us know about Lord Macaulay during the British rule, who did a lot of damage. He inflicted maximum damage. Sometimes, you know, after a World Cup match, they say, this bowler inflicted maximum damage on the team. That's why he lost the World Cup. So in one sense, this not so great bowler, infamous Lord Macaulay, he did a lot of damage to India. Culturally, he completely, you know, destroyed the cultural fabric. He worked relentlessly towards that. He was a man on a wrong mission, actually. So Lord Macaulay, and also, he had his beautiful Asatsang also, a lot of his again, unpopular associates, right? They did a lot of damage in India. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur then had his appearance and his activities had quite a bit to do with extracurricular activities. Some of the things that when you study are quite shocking. Some of the views of Lord Macaulay, I read on some of his views at the office and his associates. He made statements like this. He said, A single shelf of good European literature, a single shelf of good European literature is worth a whole library of Indian and Arabic literature. I don't know whether it's called or whatever. So this was a statement he made. and he is a leader. Okay, he was first covered in India. That's it, Prime Minister makes a statement. So, at that time he was the number in India. He dedicated Vedic cosmology because he heard that there were these rivers, he studied this kind of oceans of mango juice and whatever. So, he dedicated the Vedic cosmology, but he made a statement. He said, such astronomy is good for creating humor, some humor, and entertaining the girls at English boarding schools. The astronomy of given in the Srimad Bhagavatam is great humor in English boarding schools. Okay. If you read the seventh verse, you will mention it. Further, he also spoke, he marginalized the pastimes of Buddha and Krishna. He had associates, he all his associates under his leadership. They together called these pastimes as perverted copies of Christianity. So where is the relationship and so on and so forth? The blasphemed Sanskrit as a language, the blasphemed Sanskrit literature, they discouraged teaching of regional languages in English schools. They dedicated the concept of deity worship. They introduced the word idol worship. And finally, Lord Macaulay declared that the greatest objective of the British government is promotion of English literature, European literature, and material science amongst the natives of India. So this was some of the things that were articulated. Now, with such views, and that too, who is talking here? They were called as India's Supreme Ruling Council. They are members of India's Supreme Ruling Council. So when such views are there, they are very favorable to Vaishnavism, to the propagation of Vaishnavism. Okay. So therefore, somebody powerful had to come and A, mix with them in a way that mix with them in a way but may not mix with them in a sense, and then establish, give some dignity in this fact, re-establish the dignity in this fact that is due of for this interest. So that was Chila Devanakur's job. He took it on himself to do that. So that's why his contribution is still up in a sense. The second came from the so-called Indian intellectuals, headed by whom? Sri Raja Ram Mohan Roy, talking about glorifying our resource. I remember having written in the history answers glorifying me. In the prospect, I should say true or false, I should mark whatever your perfect answer. But yeah, so these people, the problem was they were trained in, many of them were trained in British schools, okay, in India. So, having been trained in such schools, they had this habit of parenting British views. Sometimes, we also get annoyed when someone does that. Especially people who, in India we say, people who return, first time from, they call us foreign returned abroad. They kind of put up some accent and all that sort of do, it's natural accent kind of. So, sometimes, in India, this whole thing sometimes happens. It is very annoying. Try to copy. We think that talking like English, man is sitting with spoon and the fork and putting that for the clock chair and man, we all start cheating. In India, we. So, hands are like, you can do a nice and enjoy yourself. Take a tea like that. That's how we. Right? We don't know all these things. A spoon falls down and say, that's it. So all this was brought back the great Britishers into India. So many of these were trained in British schools and therefore they kind of culturally active themselves and also philosophically brainwashed by brainwashed by the culture. Parenting their Britishers, and these are the people who started calling the Vedas and Puranas, they accepted it as mythology, just to please the government at that time. Mythological tales. Okay. So obviously devotees get annoyed. Someone calls Vedic leaders as mythology. Mythology comes from the word myth, which means it's not real. So therefore, these people are also not contributing much to promoting Vaishnavism. But then one thing is that every man has got some challenges. We can only pander to someone else's view to an extent that our dignity also leads to discrimination. Right. So they say, no, okay, these Upanishads, accept the Upanishads. Because it is said the Upanishads have enough textual ambiguity. Enough textual ambiguity that the Upanishads can be playing around with those words. And finally, what happens such playing around? They said that okay, it's like almost a compromise, okay, God is impersonal. Right? So they came around to those conclusions by playing around with the words of the Upanishads. Because the personal form of the Lord was obviously something which it was laughed about. Right? And of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is very outset. The whole goal of Srimad Bhagavatam is to establish the personality of the goal of Sanatana Dharma is to establish Lord Krishna as a person and then you have to establish our Lord's relationship with him. So therefore, these people were by walking quite the opposite direction. Now the worst thing they did was they were left at that. The worst thing they did was they created fusion. They created fusion of Indian literature with Western thoughts. They said, okay, let's put together Christianity plus this and create some history, philosophy called that. So they created this fusion and which they called as improvements. Improvements, okay, which are more acceptable to the so-called rational thinkers of society. Okay, so this was going on. So put something together, okay, you are okay, I am okay. So together let's make something which is okay to both of us. And then that is what it is. Right? So that was what was happening. But yet Acharati churches, whatever, because these people are ultimately, you know, they are there in powerful positions and they are respected for their intelligence, okay, for whatever they were. But what happened was when people of this nature espouse such thinking or evangelize such thinking, then what happens? The youth, especially the entire youth in Bengal, they were very influenced by this. Okay. So that, what not to speak of them in my generation also. My mother used to put, you know, M.S. Subbalakshmi, why they go in the, and I used to put B.J. I used to put Michael Jackson. And my mother used to say, Krishna. What is this? I told my mother, you don't know what is music. Michael Jackson. Of course, he was a very humble man. He said, I am bad. Okay, so I used to put that, and Rick Astley, I used to play all this full volume in my building. So that, you know, I used to grow up thinking that I was a very modern man. Completely influenced by Western thinking. And he used to like doing that, saying that. At least I used to do that. Very often. Talking about English music more. Of course, I realized later, after I came out of that soup, whatever ignorance, whatever stage phase of my life, I realized that, you know, deep in that heart, I like complete music and Hindustani classic. I realized that that is what I like. But then, not that English music is great, I'm not saying popular music is not good. Definitely there are good music musicians that have come. But at that time it was more of a fashion to be somebody, Then you are accepted in certain segments. So with the South Bombay crowd, I used to talk this. Hey, have you heard of Phil Collins later? So Suki, so I talk this. Then here when you go, then they say, have you heard of Kishore Kumar? But the entire purpose of this whole conversation was acceptance. And therefore, when the youth has this kind of, when the youth wants to be accepted into different segments of society and the powerful leaders are telling all these things, then what happened was the youth got colored at that time. So I was reading this, I was thinking, okay, how to relate to this? But yes, it happened to me also, so why would it happen at that time? So, in this ecosystem came this great Acharya, 1838, born as Kedarnath Datta. He was born in a very popular family, it is said. Very wealthy family. In fact, they had elephants in their house, it is said. His birth was in Birnagar, Olam Nadia, West Bengal. as the seventh son of Hari Krishnananda Datta, a great devotee of Bhakti Dhyana. Now, it was pretty ironic because in his family, some sections were devotees, but it is said on his mother's side, not many people were, people are not interested. No, some of them were actually indifferent to Bhakti. So therefore, later on, Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to be referred to as Daitya Kulena Prahlada, which means Prahlada, like he was born in a family of non-devotees, like a star devotee who was born. Otherwise, the family was were not very capable of Vaishnavism. So, it is said that his childhood was spent at the mansion of his maternal grandfather in Bhimar, where he got his elementary education, his primary school education he got there. In a school which was actually started by his grandmother. Later, he attended an English school at Krishnanagar, which was started by the king of Nadia, he said. And then he left the school because his brother kind of followed him. Now, sorry, little brother. Now, this was one picture in his life that he saw a lot of misery very early in his childhood. Lot of people, relatives, passing away, all the time. So he was used to seeing them. As a teenager, when he was 11 years old, his father also left this world. And when his father left the world, the whole family then gradually fell down into poverty. So whatever the wealth was there, that was also gone. So one misery after the other in his life. And at 12, his first marriage was arranged by his mother to a 5-year-old daughter of an acquaintance. It was just arranged. It was not done, it was arranged in one sense. So his uncle, whose name was Kasi Prasad Ghosh, he had mastered English under the British education system. So he schooled Kedarnath Thakur in Calcutta itself. And he was really influential in the literary circles of Calcutta. And through him, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also got put in the door, if you like, into those circles. Of course, on his own merit, then he progressed there. But he had that, he was part of that ecosystem, if you like. Now, at this very young age, Kedarnath assisted his uncle with articles to publish in the newspapers. So he developed his habit of writing at a very young age. So that was another feature of his entire life, which we call lot of writing, lot of contribution to literary work in society. In 1856-57, he was around 18 to 19 years old, so he entered formal college in Calcutta. And then here he started writing extensively in English and in Bengali language. And he actually studied English literature. And he composed a 2-part English epic entitled The Poriad, if I am pronouncing it correctly, which described the life of Porus, who met Alexander the Great. He actually wrote a literary work on that. And he was very attracted to Christian theology. In fact, in his initial days, he was attracted more to Christian theology over the Advaita Vedanta of Shankaracharya. That is also mentioned. And he spent hours comparing the writings of Christian reformers and gave lectures to the British society on the evolution of matter. So he was studying both in that sense. He was studying Vaishnavism, he was studying Christianity, he was studying Advaita Vedanta, everything was studied. And that's what eventually led him to be an expert in everything and refuting Kaitavata later on. So that was about his teenage years. Then in his adulthood, when he was around 20 years old, he returned to Nadia, to his native village, and found that his entire native village was ruined. And the whole native village was deserted owing to cholera pandemic. Today we have the corona pandemic. Most of his relatives were killed in that epidemic. And there were only 2 surviving members of his family. One was his mother and his paternal grandmother. So therefore he returned to Calcutta. But he did one thing. His grandfather had a last wish. He said that I would like him to go pilgrimage and travel to all the monasteries and the temples in the state of Orissa. So he did that. And having done that, now he began to consider the question of how he is going to do his livelihood as a grihastha. Now he was not interested in business ever, it is mentioned, because there is one value which he cherished throughout his life, that was honesty. And he knew that in business he had to do some kind of, obviously he had to say lies. Of course, in service also he said lies. Today, everywhere he said lies. But in business it was more of lies than that. So he didn't want to do that. So he started as a school teacher at Medinpura High School, of which he eventually became headmaster. So he took a pretty, a professional mode of, relatively mode of goodness, teaching. And at 22, his first son was born, and Achyutananda. But when his first son was born, his first wife also died during childbirth. And then he married his next wife, whose name was Bhagavati Devi, who remained his wife for the rest of his life. Now, since he had gone on that pilgrimage to all the temples of Orissa, and he was in the habit of writing, he published a book in English that described all the ashrams and temples in the state of Orissa. And now, that was a very important turning point in his career. Because what happened was, when he was posted as headmaster, he started looking into the various religious sects, philosophies, and practices. So he started doing the comparison of all these philosophies, because he really wanted to know. He wanted to understand how the Sanatana Dharma. And I told you earlier, the kind of views that were prevalent in society. So he took to studying this seriously, understand. And what happened was, people were taking religion very cheaply at that point in time. Generally, masses were confused, uninterested, and those who were taking religion cheaply. And at this time, he said that he came to understand the unique importance of the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, Sankirtan movement unfortunately was not very well represented at that point in time. Therefore, he took it on himself to do an onslaught. Like Pratisgara, his son also did that eventually. So he took it upon himself to launch an onslaught against those people who were polluting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings. So while he was doing that, as he was doing that, he turned 23 in age. So this was around 1861. He accepted the post of deputy magistrate. So one thing, again, whatever he had to as a profession, he excelled in that. So he had that ability right from his childhood. So good was he in his studies, in his job, or whatever he undertook. So he got the post of deputy magistrate in the government of Bengal. And later on, after seeing the corruption of the government workers, he said that I will now become a collected officer, because a collected officer gives you a good position from where you can check corruption. So on one hand, he was working on weeding out corruption, which is a moral aspect in society, and on the other hand, he continued writing books and composing Bengali poems, which had a cultural and a spiritual flavor. At 28 years old, he became the deputy collector and deputy magistrate. And it is said that as a deputy magistrate, he successfully settled a lot of disputes between the tea farmers that were happening at the time, and helped secure public aid to a lot of schools who were involved in teaching Nyaya Shastra. So obviously, now that's a big problem today. Today, the school teachers say, you want to teach no government is going to give funding. So it required some kind of persuasion, it required some kind of clout. So he did everything that he did to get those results, get those outcomes in society. So he got those fundings for these kind of schools. Eventually, he said he took charge of the government and judicial departments. And during this time, he also became fluent at Persian and Urdu, another feature of his life, that was a multi-linguist. Then, 1868, when he was 30 years old, he became the deputy magistrate of West Bengal. very big position. It is said that it was the highest rank in the government that could be obtained by any Indian person in the British rule. And at this time, somehow he obtained a rare copy of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita during this time. So, he was so much enamored, he felt so much in love with Chaitanya Charitamrita that he kept reading Chaitanya Charitamrita repeatedly. And as he studied Chaitanya Charitamrita repeatedly, his faith increased so much that he became absorbed in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes almost all day and night. And at this time, he also submitted his prayers to the Lord for the Lord's mercy, so that he may become an instrument of the Lord in spreading pure Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So, at that time, it is said that while segments were accepting Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, some segments accepted that, but people are not really accepting of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Krishna himself. So, therefore, he understood that very early on when he started with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he started also educating the masses, saying that Lord Chaitanya is none other than Lord Krishna himself. And he soon published a song in that mode, which is titled as Satchidananda Prema Alankar. This was a poem, a song that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote. When he was 31 years old, 31 years in age, 1869, he delivered a speech on Srimad Bhagavatam to a large congregation of prominent men from India as well as from England. And eventually, after that, he was transferred to a place called Champaran, where he had his second son, Radhika Prasad, was born. Now, in Champaran, what used to happen, there was a ghost who was residing near a banyan tree. And this ghost was able to influence the local judge to give decision in favor of the demonic people. So there was a big dilemma there. So he advised a local scholar to recite Srimad Bhagavatam under a tree continuously day and night. And it is said that, so this was the state of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he actually said that, and you can imagine, it's saying here, today in Rajasthan is very easy, but at that time if you give such suggestions, ghost, Srimad Bhagavatam, ghost, that's the middle of the day. You can imagine what would have happened under that British rule. So anybody would be laughing, but he had immense faith in Srimad Bhagavatam. So he was willing to, in one sense, risk his credibility at that time by making such suggestions. It's not easy to take that at that time, right? Of course, even today, if I go to any place, there is a ghost who has possessed my mind, is very, very odd. Let us sit and do math. You can imagine what that, right? Or someone died, haunted also. Some real estate agent, some suicide has happened, you say, okay, pretty Bhagavatam. Go to that, but stop there and I go and tell them that. Sorry, I don't understand what I'm talking. Right? So it's as ridiculous as it was somewhere at that time. This should connect. So, it is said that after studying Srimad Bhagavatam, eventually that whole tree came crashing down. And the ghost also left the place. That was faith in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, and then, after that, it is said he moved to the holy city of Jagannath Puri. This was around when he was 35 years of age, 1873. And here he met Bishak Sen. All of you know the pastime of Bishak Sen. Bishak Sen was, they had such law matter there. And he called himself as the Guna Avatar. He said, I am the Vishnu, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Obviously, people are aware of Brahma and Shiva. Two people here, explained, he had his qualities, two of his associates. So, this is Brahma, this is Shiva. And the Supreme Personality of the world. So, all of us know that last time when Bhaktivinoda Thakur went and tried to put good sense into him, saying that please don't do this, right? So, and in fact, he gave spiritual instructions also, saying that we can't go to the world. So, despite putting all good sense, obviously he did not abide. Now, the Britishers had their own agenda. Britishers did not want to establish Sanatana. They were upset with him for a different reason. There were upset because there was a lot of cloud and it was anti-British government, besides that. So the Britishers wanted him in jail for a different reason, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted him in jail for a different reason. Right? Nevertheless, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, through his Lord, enabled him to catch this Bishop Sen and then put him in jail. When he was put in jail, what happened? Bishop Sen had some mystic powers. Through his mystic powers, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter developed a high fever, right? To an extent that she was almost about to leave her body. So even Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife also said, please stop this tirade against this fellow. Leave him. Our daughter will die because of all the kind of black magic that he is doing or because of his mystic powers. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not budge. He said, no. And then in short fact he goes to, this fellow has to be punished. So because he is acting quite contrary as a leader, as an influential person, he is pretending to be God. So I cannot pardon him. So there was a lot of integrity in his mission, to the extent that he didn't even care for his family in that sense. Okay. Of course, care for his family, but he was not really compromised on his mission. So he was getting the mission easy, if you like. So, eventually, what happened? Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself, during the mature state of the court, he himself got that kind of fear, but still he was relentless. Eventually, what happened? It was established, this fellow is a nuisance to society, and he was arrested. But what happened? Whenever you go to arrest him, these people have mystic powers. So someone advised Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that these mystic yogis have all their power in their care. So the moment his head was cut off, Bhishak Sen fell to the ground. Actually, it was said because he had to be transported as a stretcher to the jail itself. And eventually, in the jail, it is said that he committed suicide. So this speaks about the boldness, the missionary spirit of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not compromising. He had this same spirit later on, but this Siddhanta Saraswati also completely fearless. Don't care about anything. Establish the mission. Do whatever that is required. 1874 to 1893, between 36 years to 35 years, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur spent much of his time in seclusion, chanting the holy names of the Lord. At the same time, executing his worldly duties very well. He wrote several books in Sanskrit. Some of the books are mentioned as Sri Krishna Samhita, Tattva Sutram, Tattva Viveka, Kalyana Dharmadaru, and then Datta Kaustava. So many books that he wrote in English as well as in Bengali. While in Jagannath Puri, he said, he also established a Vaishnava Discussion Society, which was innovative at that point in time. He called it as the Bhagavat Sansat. And he established a society in Jagannath Vallabh Gardens to sit and to share the Jagannath to discuss Krishna Katha. And it is said that all prominent Vaishnavas of that time joined his satsang program, Krishna Katha program, except one Babaji. This Babaji thought that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was unauthorized because he did not wear Kanti Mala at that time. Or he didn't wear Tilak, right? Because he was unauthorized. Not only did he think that, but he instigated others also against Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So it is said that soon thereafter, this Babaji contracted a deadly illness. And in a dream, Lord Jagannath appeared to this Babaji and told him, you seek the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, otherwise you will not be cured. For overcoming your illness and death. He did so, he complied with that. And eventually it is said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur only gave him special medicine. Cured. But more importantly than the fact that he was cured by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gained awareness of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's extraordinary spiritual position, which is what he wanted, and that happened. So, generally now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in that age, by the will of the Lord wanted to glorify the position of this exalted devotee in society. Now, soon thereafter, Bhaktivinoda Thakur continued becoming more and more influential to the extent that he was given the role of manager of the Jagannath Puri temple complex. He became a manager there. Now, obviously he had governmental power, plus he had his position in the temple. So he utilized this, utilized whatever you have in promoting Sanatana Dharma. So he was very expert at doing that. So he used all his government powers to establish regular worship of the deities in Jagannath Puri. In fact, it's like the temple courtyard itself, he established a Bhakti Mandap where daily discourses on Srimad Bhagavatam were held. And Bhakti Mandapu himself would invest long hours on hearing, doing Srimad Bhagavatam Katha and chanting the holy name, especially at Toda Bhuvinath Mandir, the tomb of Haila Sakur, Siddha Bhogul tree, all these places, and Bhaktivinoda. Now in 1874, in a house near the Jagannath Vallabh Gardens, his most illustrious fourth son was born. Answering his prayers to Lord Vishnu to send a ray of Vishnu to preach, who eventually go and spread Lord Chaitanya's mission all over the world. So he named him as Bimal Prasad, who would later become Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the guru of Srila Prabhupada. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur one day discovered, because of Jagannath Puri, he was in a management position, so he discovered the king of Puri had misappropriated around 80,000 rupees at that time from the temple. So, what he did was, obviously, bold person that he was, he took the king head on. He forced the king to offer Lord Jagannath 52 meals in retribution for the offense a day. And it is said that this such bhoga offering diminished the money very quickly with the king head. And the king was furious, and with the help of local pundits, he started a 30-day tantric ritual to finish the offering. Right? This was a sacrifice to kill him. So it is said that the last oblations of such a tantric mantra was poured into the sacrificial fire, not to speak of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, no. The king's son died. So it acted eventually on the king's son. So that is what the Lord protected always, Lord Jagannath protected his pure devotee. Of course, there are many other parts like that. The car would not move ahead of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So there are so many other things not going into that. So around when he was around the age of 40, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur left Puri and returned to Bengal. And he saw Navadvipa, Shantipur and Kalna. He saw all these places. Here it is said in Bengal, he wrote two famous books, Sri Krishna Samhita and Krishna Kalpatar, which caught the attention of many Indian pundits and educated men. And also during this time, he took formal Diksha initiation from Srila Bipin Bihari Goswami, who descended from the Janava family. So the Diksha part. It is said that when he was in 1881, he began publishing a very sick original journal which had a lot of impact at that time. It was called the Sajjan Toshin. And when he started publishing this original journal, he developed a desire to see the land of Braj. So, he set aside three months for this purpose to see Vrindavan Bhumi. And here is where it is said that he met Srila Jagannath Das Babaji. Okay. Now, Srila Jagannath Babaji every 6 months will go between Navadvipa and Vrindavan. So, in one of his Vrindavan visits, these two great personalities met. Now, as soon as he met Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, he realized, I would like to accept this person as my primary Siksha Guru. And that's how all discipline succession got shows Jagannath Das Babaji then Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now, it is said that he continued his work of writing. He never gave his writing on despite his busy schedule. So many books and commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. He wrote books called Chaitanya Shikshamrit, commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrit, it is called Chaitanya Charanamrit. So many books were there. He wrote, he gave lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam, on Chaitanya Charitamrit, on Nectar of Devotion. And during this time, as he continued giving these lectures, two things came out very clearly. One is scholarliness, his grip over Vedic philosophy and his purity of his teachings. Okay. And it became so popular amongst the Vaishnava community that Kedarnath, that eventually got the honorary title of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So that's how his name changed among the Vaishnava circles. Now, when he was 49, he resolved to quit government service and again go to Vrindavan for the rest of his life.
He had already gone to Vrindavan, and he met Jagannath,
but again he wanted to go to Vrindavan. But something different, the Lord had some other plan for him. What was the plan? One night while he was still in government service, he got a dream in which Lord Chaitanya spoke that you will certainly go to Vrindavan, but first there is some service you must walk on in Navadvipa. Okay, which is not taken as birthplace. So, after this dream, he took this dream so seriously that he secured a transfer to Krishnanagar near Navadvipa. And one night, sitting on the roof of a dharamshala in Navadvipa, when he was standing, he spotted a tall tree next to a building, and this tree was giving out an amazing effulgence. So, then that kind of got somewhere next in the back of his mind. And he went to Krishnanagar library and started studying the old manuscripts of Chaitanya Bhagavat and Navadvipa Mahaparikrama. And also started studying the old maps of Nadia. Further, what he did was he went started going around the village and speaking to all the elderly people in the village to uncover facts about where exactly is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. And then eventually what happened? He ended up discovering that. Of course, all of you know that he still did not wanted to validate that with his Shiksha Guru. So he got he invited Jagannath Babaji there. Jagannath Babaji got Babaji's servant. And as soon as Babaji got down, started jumping up and down, saying, this is the place. And that's how our Islam, which we said not, Prabhupada established our own headquarters in that place. Otherwise, many people are saying that the birthplace is here, someone was saying birthplace is there, just to establish some concrete structure around that and make some money as a nation. Right? So all that was finished. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the greatest contribution. So without this contribution, today we will not have our Mayapur headquarters in that sense. Now, he had a great festival, he said. And very soon after the festival, after the real Maya was, the real purpose was discovered, then he published this book called as Navadvipa Mahatmya. Now, in the same year, he renovated the house of Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, who used to reside in a place called Ravasthar, and took 2 years leave from office and acquired a plot of land in Srila Godhumadvipa, where he built his bhajan kutir, the play house where he will do his eventual bhajan, and that he called as Suravi Kunji. Could also be seen, as well as the lack of a boat, would go up further for some distance, then you will see Suravi Kunji. Around 1890, when he crossed 50, around 52 years, he established a Namahatta center there, the marketplace of the holy name in our day. So sometimes it is said that Jagannath Das Babaji would personally visit this Namahatta and have kirtan, chanting devotional songs, glorifying the glorifying Lord Krishna. And he opened many Namahatta branches all over Bengal. And his Namahatta became a self-sustaining success and continued to then spread the glories of Gaudiya Vaishnavism even after his return back to government service. So it was not an after return religion collapse. So he established a very good second line. So the things continued. So that was testimony to his good leadership. A good leader is one who establishes a second line. So it is said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mercy reached far beyond the geographical boundaries of India or even Asia. He was very intent on taking Krishna consciousness to the Western countries. So that was his deep desire in his heart. So, therefore, he wrote a book on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lifetime and precepts. But what he did, he wrote now this book in English language. And it is said that this book found its way into the Royal Asiatic Society in London, the library of McGill University in Canada. So that people gather this Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and any other such respectable institutions. And it was reviewed in the Journal of the Royal Asiatic Society by a very great European scholar as well at that time. At the age of 70, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur took external dress of a Babaji, devoting the remainder of his life to solitary chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Now, despite the fact that he lived like a Babaji, his first few years he would travel between Calcutta and Puri and still continue writing books. So in one sense, you see a person who like was wanting, was becoming a Vajanandini in one sense, but his Bhojya and his spirit was still there. So he did Bhajan, but he continued writing this, giving this little reward. Now, at this time, okay, having done such Bhajan, he made three predictions. The first prediction was that he said, very soon a personality will appear. Very soon a personality will appear. And this personality will travel all over the world to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First prediction he made. Second, very soon the chanting of Harinam Sankirtan will be spread all over the world. People from America, England, France, Germany, Poland, Russia, everywhere, they will take up kartanas and mridangas and chant Hare Krishna in their townships. Second prediction. Third, he said, fair-skinned foreigners will come to Srila Mayapur now and join with the Bengali Vaishnavas to chant Jai Sachi, Jai Sachi. Three predictions. Obviously, I don't need to elaborate who that person was. Still, it was Srila Prabhupada. On 1914, on 23rd of June, just before noon at Jagannath Puri, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur disappeared from this world, coinciding with the disappearance of Srila Gadadhar Pandit. It is said that his transcendental remains were taken from Orissa back to his beloved Gotuno, the land of Lord Chaitanya, in his eternal pastimes, in his huge Sankirtan, and it were the remains that he interred in Gotuno. It is the Gaurav Pramodisha Vitika says that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is none other than Kamal Manjari in Krishna Leela. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Maharaj ki
jai.
So in 21 minutes we will discuss the next personality. Are there any comments or corrections that are there on what I spoke on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Open the show.
Are we told that he also predicted the planetarium temple?
Pardon?
He also had submission of the planetarium temple.
He also had submission of what?
The vision of the very planetarium temple.
Yes, yes, yes. He just said that he also had the very planetarium. Is that a question?
Yeah, no, it's a comment.
It's a comment. Okay.
That he had the vision.
He had the vision.
Alright. So it is also the disappearance of Srila Gadadhar Pandit. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar, he was a Gaurav Pandit. The Gaurav Pandit Sri Krishna states that the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna, Vrindavaneshwari Srimati Narayana, is now personified in the form of Sri Gadadhar Pandit in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. So Sri Gadadhar Pandit is another than Radha and in the male form, being with her beloved Lord Krishna, who was in the mood of Radha. Very difficult to initiate to Lord time to understand this. Very difficult. Lord Krishna is so, Gadadhar Pandit was whose part of our Panchatattva. He made his appearance in His parents' name was Madhav Vishwa and Ratnavati, who were natives of Chakrakan district. But later they moved to proper Navadvip. Since childhood, Garada Pandit and Nimai Bhattacharya were very close to each other. In fact, he said that they went to the same school. Now, since early childhood, the nature or the personality of Garada Pandit is described. It is said that as a child, he was very serene, patient, calm, quiet, and he was very fond of solitude and was very renounced in his nature. Now, if you see this, it is quite contrary to his friend, Lord Chaitanya, Nimai Pandit. Nimai Pandit was exactly the opposite. So it was like intriguing that how both of them are very close friends, very diverse natures. Nimai Pandit was extremely mysterious. But Nimai Pandit also was very mysterious, very mischievous. It is said that he was also precautious, which means people could see that Nimai Pandit was not an ordinary child. He had abilities which are there of well beyond his age. And because Lord Chaitanya, while Radha Pandit was also very scholarly, we all know that Radha Pandit was ultimate scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam, right? It's not that, I mean, he didn't know any part of the tattva. But he was very silent. Whereas Lord Chaitanya, he was very, in that sense, Lord Chaitanya was very brilliant at that time. And he would go and ask a lot of questions. He always question others, put some parallel arguments here, repeat those arguments. Very diverse personalities there. So Lord Chaitanya always will start with that Nyaya logic. He will say something, then he will defeat someone, then someone says something, again he will know you are right, and then again, you know, he will again defeat that logic also. His own logic he will defeat. So he kept doing that. So therefore, Gadadhar was not very fond of this particular aspect of Lord Chaitanya. They were very good friends because they had different personality. So he will keep a relative distance on Nimai Pandit in childhood in that sense. So he was internally very fond of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, because he kept this distance, en route to school, Nimai Pandit will deliberately catch hold of the other Pandit and he will pull his leg. He will chide him. Chide him. He said, "What do you think of yourself?" He will ask, "What do you think of yourself? You think you are a great Pandit? Tell me what are the symptoms of a liberated soul?" He will ask. And Gadadhar Pandit, very, you know, he was very serene, sober personality. He will explain his scripture to Nimai Pandit. And then after awful hearing all that, Nimai Pandit will say, "No, absolutely wrong answer you have given." Okay. And he said, "The display of acute misery and suffering," I repeat, "the display of acute misery and suffering is actually the symptom of a truly liberated soul," said Nimai. Gadadhar Pandit tried to argue further on this point, but with a wave of his hand, Nimai Pandit dismissed all his logic and told him that he, Gadadhar Pandit, would understand the answer later on when he got home, not now. Now, while Gadadhar Pandit could not understand this aspect of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Nimai Pandit, he looked up to Advaita Acharya and later on, Advaita Acharya, NYU Testament, Advaita, Ishwara Puri, Advaita. He wondered many times, because he looked up to these personalities, but he wondered why Advaita Acharya looks up to Nimai Pandit with such intense faith and devotion, and even Ishwara Puri, who used to show so much of respect to Nimai Pandit, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, undoubtedly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very clever, Nimai Pandit was very clever and intelligent, but it seemed that Advaita Acharya and Ishwara Puri saw something in Nimai Pandit which was much beyond that intelligence, something at a very different level, which Gadadhar Pandit at that time could not understand, at least as a pastime, he could not understand. So once, when Gadadhar Pandit was plucking flowers at the home of Srivas Pandit, Srivasanga, Srivas Pandit came out with a basket to just serve him. And he saw that Srivas Pandit was beaming with joy, very, very happy. So, Radha Pandit asked him, why are you so happy and cheerful today? So he said that because Nimai Pandit has returned from Gaya yesterday. So I am very happy. Now, obviously, Radha Pandit is wondering, Nimai Pandit has returned for what? Why this person is so happy? Because he was used to seeing the kind of seeking as an arrogant of Nimai Pandit in his childhood. But now, what Srivas Pandit told him was quite the contrary. He said, I am very happy to see Nimai Pandit and you must also come to see him. Okay. He says that you will not believe that all the cheekiness and arrogance which he showed during his childhood have now completely disappeared. Now when you see him, you will find someone who is very compassionate, humble and meek. And this was news to Radha Pandit. Further he said that this personality, like a madman, he is going around, he is continuously shedding tears, he is dripping in agony, and he cries piteously, Krishna, Krishna. Again, this was news to Radha Pandit. How this personality has changed so much. And further he said, he does not even look like a normal human being anymore. Rather, he looks like someone from another realm. And then he said that Nimai Pandit has called all of us to congregate at the house of Shuklambar Brahmachari. And there, he may share his realizations and his reasons of his pain and suffering, why he is behaving the way he is. And Gadadhar Pandit instinctively, when he heard this, he remarked, he said, look, I don't think I have been invited to this by Shuklambar Brahmachari, but though I am invited, I will also come. I want to see Nimai Pandit in this new form. And I want to know the reason behind this incredible change. So he went there. But when he went there, what happened? He did not come in front of Lord Chaitanya. He went and then he hid himself from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, as he hid himself behind a tree, from there he was observing all this. He saw the beautiful form of Nimai Pandit. Lord Chaitanya emerged. Beautiful, golden and effulgent Nimai stood in the middle of the courtyard and he said that with his two large lotus-like eyes, Nimai Pandit was looking at everyone who were gathered. As he was looking at everyone, suddenly Nimai Pandit lost control of himself and he burst into tears and sobbed loudly, crying, where is my Lord Sri Krishna? He was here just now. Where has he disappeared? Where has he hidden himself from me? He was here just now. Where is he hidden? And he kept on saying this till he became unconscious. And everyone was standing there, they were stunned at seeing these ecstatic symptoms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It came down with a crash actually. Crashed down unconscious. And upon regaining consciousness after some time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was regaining consciousness. From at a distance he could hear someone sobbing, weeping, uncontrollably, inside the house. So Mahaprabhu asked, who is this person? What is the noise? Okay, someone is sobbing. So at that time, Shuklambar Brahmachari told him, this is your dear Gadadhar, he is the one who is sobbing. Now we have to understand, from very childhood, Gadadhar Pandit's only object of attachment truly, though the external behavior was that he couldn't approve of Nimai Pandit's pranks and all that, because of the nature of both, rivals' nature of both of them, but from very childhood, Gadadhar Pandit's only object of attachment was Nimai in his life. So, and Nimai Pandit also knew that. He knew how much Radha Pandit loved him. Both of them loved him. He just immensely. So, Nimai Pandit called since early childhood, you always were devoted to Lord Krishna. This is Dr. Mahaprabhu Mangal Rodriguez. He said in another way, since early childhood, you were always devoted to Krishna, but I wasted my time in false pursuits and achieved nothing. Doing all arguments, fallacious arguments. At one time, I too was very close to Lord Krishna, but due to my own fault, I lost this invaluable treasure. Please tell me, how can I find Lord Krishna again? And he's asking this to Tarun, and saying so, he wept inconsolably and lost consciousness again. And after some time, he saw Radha Pandit alone, and he might ask him again, where is my Lord Krishna? Please tell me, please tell me. So Radha Pandit answered, he said, your Lord Krishna is hidden within your heart. So as he said that, Nimai Pandit started digging in his chest with his nails, and he said, Radha leapt forward and held Lord Nimai's hand tightly. And Mother Sachi was witnessing this entire incident, and then she ran up to them and then she told Radha Pandit, you have saved my Nimai. She blessed him and said, please save Nimai throughout your entire life and ensure that my son is always protected. She gave the responsibility to the other Pandit. Now, so this was one person. Now, Radhanatha Pandit was very affectionate towards one of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, whose name was Mukundanath. Now, when a Vaishnava saint used to visit Mukundanath would immediately inform Radha and both of them will go for darshan of any saints that used to visit. Now, Mukundanath knew that Radha Pandit did not have a guru. So therefore, he used to, that was one of the reasons, he used to take them and to see, to have association with any saintly persons. In one such visit, he said, the exalted personality Kundari Vidyanidhi has come from Chakragram. And then he took Garada Pandit there. All of us on the past. When Garada Pandit went there, he saw that there was this personality who was lying on the side of a canopy with expensive, what are the products? Ornate canopy, very expensive cloth. And he was lying there and he was having this beetle like, or the paan, the supari kind of thing. He was eating that. And then you have a dukkha nearby. And these are the kind of personality. So, Radha Pandit got upset. He said, are you sure you got me the right personality here? What is wrong? Who are you? No, showing you. So he said, no, you just wait. So what happened? At that time, Kundan started reciting verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And what happened? As he started reciting verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, his personality rolled down from the canopy like a mad man. Started rolling on the ground and taking all that expensive clothing that he was wearing, right? And started getting ashtasattvika symptoms. When Radha Pandit saw this, at that time when he became, he realized that his personality is not really ordinary personality. Yet, still not sure, little bit of doubt in his mind after that. Then so he went to Lord Chaitanya Nimai Pandit and he asked, I saw Kundari Vidyanidhi. So, shall I accept him as a guru? Because it looks like, I'm sorry, I just didn't explain him like that, but I want to accept him as a guru. Can I do that? By doing so, the mental offense which I made against Kundari Vidyanidhi, at least I will get over that. I will atone for that. And not my Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, why not? You must. You don't know who is Kundari Vidyanidhi. Of course, Kundari Vidyanidhi is Vishwanatha. So that is also mentioned. So this is how he met his guru, Radha Pandit. Okay, we have 2-3 minutes, so kind of fast. Yeah. Now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Udaharanam, they are very close, as I mentioned. Both of them had a very loving relationship with each other. But still, and therefore what happened? Radhana Pandit could not bear any separation from Lord Chaitanya, right? But Lord Chaitanya who made decisions himself, which devastated Radhana. What are the relations? One is he desired to take sannyas. Second, he desired to go to Puri. So, this was a big part of argument which both of them. Radhana Pandit argued with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why do you have to take sannyas? On top of that, why do you have to go to Puri? You always teach here without sannyas. But Nimar Pandit convinced him that it is better that I take sannyas because today sannyas is a sacred. Sannyas is taken both seriously by the masses. Otherwise, I cannot be as effective in my mission. Then he said, why are you going to Puri? If we are sannyas, why are you going to Puri? So, this kind of an argument happened continuously between them. And finally, the other Pandit gave in. But he said, Lord Chaitanya, if you have decided now to go to Puri and I can't stop you from going to Puri, at least you do one thing, let me accompany you to Puri, I will not wait to Puri. That also Mahaprabhu denied. He said, no, I'm going alone. Okay, so it is said that Radha Pandit was left behind, burning in the fire of separation, wondering how he would survive. So this was separation. But after some time, Radha Pandit could not tolerate the separation. So accompanied by some devotees from Navadi, he decided to visit Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. And he also decided that I would not stay in Puri. So he started living in Toka Garden. Every day reading out Srimad Bhagavatam for Lord Chaitanya's pleasure. Now one day when he was sitting on a beach with Lord Chaitanya discussing Krishna Katha, Lord Chaitanya decided to bestow special mercy on grace on Radha Pandit. So as they were sitting on the beach, Lord Chaitanya was digging on a particular spot. And from there manifested the beautiful deity of Sri Gopinath, which eventually became Toka Gopinath. It was established in Toka Garden. And so that deity was established. And then Lord Chaitanya gave three instructions to the three activities. First is, be the authoritative teacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. So you will be the ultimate authority in Srimad Bhagavatam, number one. Number two, give diksha or formal initiation on my behalf to the true seekers of pure Vrajavati. Second one. Third is, worship the deity of Sri Toka Gopinath along with his eternal consort. So soon after this, Radha Pandit, he started obviously doing all these three things. He took a vow of Kshetra Sanyas because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his instruction so that he can continue another uninterrupted seva of Sri Gopinath. But as he took Kshetra Sanyas, Lord Chaitanya said that he wants to go to Vrindavan. Okay. So Radha Pandit insisted on accompanying him. Then Lord Chaitanya reminded him, no, you have taken Kshetra Sanyas from Chaitanya. He said, don't give up here, Kshetra Sanyas. So Radha Pandit said, what will my Kshetra Sanyas? He said, what Kshetra, what Sanyas? Lord Chaitanya, you are my residence. Wherever you are, that is my Sri Kshetra, he said. Wherever you go, that is Sri Kshetra. And you are also my Gopinath. So what Kshetra Sanyas? So I am there with you only. Going with you, I will be Puri. And going with you, I will be sorry. So, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not happy with all these arguments. He said no. Right. So, he said no, this is not proper, he said. Because he wanted Radha Pandit to establish an example. So, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused this, he said that Radha Pandit nearly fainted. He could not tolerate this separation. So, Lord Chaitanya told Sarvamoha Bhattacharya to take him back to Puri. So, his vow is intact. But something interesting happened. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vrindavan trip itself was cancelled. Right? And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told everyone that he felt that he could not get entrance into Vrindavan Dham. The whole trip was cancelled because he met Radha Pandit unhappy. This was very sweet to hear this. So such was the, these are some of the beautiful pastimes of Radha Pandit and Radha Chaitanya and their affection for each other. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a beautiful line here. Smara Gaura Gadadara Ekana Bhava Gaura Gadadara Pakshachara Shrunu Gaura Gadadara Charu Katham Bhaja Godhuma Kanana Kunja Vinum. Which means, he says, remember the wonderful pastimes of Gaur and Gadadara. Become a servant of Gaur and Gadadara. Listen to the beautiful narrations concerning Gaur and Gadadhar and worship Lord Gaur, the beautiful moon of the groves of Bodhimadeva. So I'll stop here and take all your blessings on the Theravada words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gadadhar Pandit. And request if there are any corrections for it, anything. Questions about this? Not that I can answer any questions about this, but I thought not already on this personality, but still.
Thank you for the class. In life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and even great Vaishnava acharyas, we see some great suffering and poverty of his condition. How we can understand that?
So, to me, I understood it best when I heard the Tathena compounds. A devotee, despite misery after misery after misery in one's lifetime, still thinks that I deserve more, and throughout these miseries takes it as a token given by the Lord in a very humble state of mind. And never stops his service amidst all these conditions. Such a person, Lord Krishna says, Jiveda Yo Mukti Padesa Jagaya Bhak. Jiveda Yo Mukti Padesa Jagaya Bhak. Such a person becomes a rightful, has a rightful claim to liberation. So, now we need personalities who can demonstrate to all of us this. For example, if the Lord gives me misery, I am collapsed for 2 days. And we will have to find out, maybe he is still in Krishna consciousness, and then we start blaming, oh Lord, I chanted 16 rounds for you, you did this. So therefore we need solid personalities who we can look up to, who have gone to hell after hell after hell, misery after misery, and still with faith, and more important than faith is that the love for Krishna was so great that you know, their only purpose of existence was serving the Lord. So we have to have examples of such missionaries. So if life would have been conducive for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then everyone would say, what was great? Even if I get a job and I have a lot of money and I get promotion and I have a nice bungalow in Albert Park opposite, you know, whatever that is, Hobson Bay, then I can also do Bhaktivinoda. But no, it does not like that. In fact, sometimes it's easy to be poor person throughout life. But when you are wealthy and then you become poor, very difficult. It's very difficult to come down from the standard of living. When you have relatives and you are in a joint family, you lose everyone from the joint family. It is even more miserable. For me, I can tell you from my heart that bulk of what when I could tolerate my own mother's departure very recently in February, yes, I can say quite a bit attributed to the prayers of devotees, the strength which I derived from Krishna consciousness. But bulk of it I should also attribute to the fact that I got used to staying away from her for many years. Okay, so I should not deny that part, it's a practical part. Because I have stayed away from my mother because I was traveling all the time. I don't know which point I was trying to say here, but in this context,
relatives
are taken away. But being in a joint family and losing one relative to the other, I don't understand how it is when you are staying with someone. For example, you are staying with someone here and then that person leaves. Oh my God. So, you can see, if you actually
If you want to relate to this journey of Shrimad Prabhupada, we have to think we are in that situation and think, I am a big grand family, everyone is going, my brother is dying, my mother is dying, my father is dying, and then all the money is gone. Then after that, Vishak said, because my daughter is going to die, I am going to die, and then Zilpa is sitting on the missionary. And then also the aspect of British literacy. The kind of, that obviously you will be considered a Bohemian, you will be considered a madman, you are speaking in favor of the scriptures. When that father, and all these scholars there, they are pandering to these Britishers. So he was kind of, that was also a complete revolution that he was trying to bring about. Now, this is not easy. So the Lord makes the life of his devotees difficult so that then we can understand that it is still possible to do bhakti. Bhakti is not dependent on any external situation. Bhakti is the only reason for continuing bhakti. I don't know. That's how I understand. Shri Prabhupada ki